It's a virtual meeting, as you all know, and we will be recording this, as you just heard. If you would, just for the standpoint of etiquette with our virtual meeting, just please keep your microphone muted, if you would, when you're not speaking. Don't have any problem with everyone who wants to keep their cameras on. If you don't feel comfortable with it, feel free to go ahead and turn them off. Not an issue with us. Any comments or questions, anything that you want to participate in, we certainly do encourage participation in our meetings. Just go ahead and raise your hand and we will call on you when the time allows. Just want to let everyone know Chris is not here today. Obviously, I'll be taking over for this meeting today, but we expect that he'll be back in very near order, and he definitely sends his regrets for not participating today. So we got some objectives we'd like to get accomplished in today's meeting. We want to announce some changes to the committee itself, the leadership, and then we want to go on and listen to the presentation by Conrad on Kongsberg Industry Solutions. And then Paula will follow up with talking a little bit about the Lighthouse Awards and the annual convention that will be occurring later on. So I'll go ahead and get started. We'll talk first off with the committee leadership. You guys heard before from Chris talking about adding a second vice chair to the group. And it's been pretty much a decision that Mr. Ron Connington, who's to my left, at least on my screen, will begin being the second vice chair of our group. Like to welcome him aboard to our group and have him, if you would, just briefly introduce himself and talk a little bit about himself.
Yeah, thank you, John. Ron Connington, I'm port engineer for the Port of Palm Beach. Been in ports for quite a while, was in Port Everglades from 79 to 86, then built a lot of Southport, then worked in water resources and things like that. And back here at Port of Palm Beach. So it's my pleasure to serve on this committee, and I look forward to talking to everybody even more in the future.
Thanks, Ron. Welcome aboard. Okay, we've got a presentation today. Industry solution provider, new member to AAPA, Conrad, you're on. You go ahead and begin.
Great. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Paula, and to the committee for letting me speak. I was disabled for participant screen sharing. Paula, will I be able to share?
You should be able to. Is it not allowing you to?
No, I'm getting a host disabled participant screen sharing message.
Okay. I just put that all participants can share. Has that changed?
Yes, thank you.
Are you able to share now? There you go.
Perfect. Good. So recognizing that time's kind of precious here, I'll be cramming a two-hour presentation into the 15 or 20 minutes I'm allocated. I'm not sure how many people on the Facilities Engineering Committee are familiar with Kongsberg, but we're a 208-year-old company that's 51% owned by the Norwegian government. And it was founded the same year that Norway split from Sweden and also separated from the Kingdom of Denmark. And the very first thing that Kongsberg as a company did was built rifles for the Norwegian military. So we started off in military, which is now continued by defense and aerospace. We also on the left formed Kongsberg Maritime only in the mid 70s when the North Sea oil came out. But that's now the largest part of Kongsberg with 8,000 employees. And then in the center, Kongsberg Digital, which is levering our experience in offshore oil and gas production and vessel construction and operation into digital twins. And I know that there's a lot of that going on in the maritime space as well. With respect to Kongsberg Maritime, we have five business units. On the left is sensors and robotics, and that is the part of the business that I work in, about $400 million a year in that sector. We also are focused in deck machinery and motion control. So dynamic positioning for floating offshore oil drilling wells. That's our technology that we founded. Integrated solution is involved in vessel construction. We do work with propulsion and engines and also global customer support. So we have a couple of hundred people working out of Houston and New Orleans, supporting the offshore oil and gas business, as well as cruise ships. But we are a global company. In terms of marine civil engineering activities, which is pertinent to this committee here, we are involved in construction and maintenance projects, scheduled and unscheduled infrastructure inspection, scheduled and unscheduled hydrographic or bathymetric survey. We are involved in navigation channel and berth maintenance, and we do a lot of work with dredging contractors, primarily in Europe, not so much in the Americas. And so that's why I've been given this role within Kongsberg. I'm the sales director for coasts, ports, and inland waterways, because my company has figured out that there actually is a lot of opportunity for us to work with clients like yourselves in North America, just get better known and lever some of our global experience and do a better job in the Americas. We actually have market tenure. Most of you are probably aware of the manual on the left, which is the Waterfront Facilities Inspection and Assessment manual published by the American Society of Civil Engineers. And the two images in the center come out of the section on sonar instruments, which is used for inspection. So the top one shows piles supporting a wharf structure. And the bottom shows a concrete wall with engineering features. Those two images are developed using our high resolution imaging sonar, and they're courtesy of Collins Engineers. So we have a strong tenure in the market already. The United States Army Corps of Engineers uses these same instruments in their responsibilities to inspect their dams and their locks and their canals and so forth. So that is really demonstrating our tenure. Now, what's new in the market? And I'm thinking here about the people who are responsible for port facilities and doing projects like Chris and Ron, and the consultants like Nancy Lair, who's on the call, who have to work with the port to do the studies and then plan and execute the projects. So on the upper left, you see there's a tripod device, which is a sonar that's mounted on a gimbal from a tripod. And then this is deployed on the surface of the bed of body of water you're looking to work at. And the operator is able to create sonar images. Now on the right, you can see an example of a vertical series of images that have been spliced together. And this is of a dock and a bridge foundation. But the thing is, this is in zero visibility water. So typically divers would do inspections, but the manual says that when divers are doing inspections here, they're tactile, very difficult to do. Sonar converts sound energy into high resolution visual product that civil engineers can assess, and the diving supervisors during operations can actually guide divers to targets safely. So it's a win-win. What's new is that we've partnered with a company on the bottom that creates high-resolution three-dimensional digital twins using aerial drone photographs, hundreds of them, and then uses machine learning to identify features. And we are going to be launching very shortly the same technology to splice together multiple sonar images from below the waterline and then potentially drape them over 3D point clouds to create three-dimensional models below the surface. So we'll be able to provide data for civil engineers below the surface and above the waterline with LiDAR data as an example. So if you look at this image here on this slide, on the bottom, this has been sliced by an experienced sonar operator from multiple sonar images, and it takes hours of work and experience. On the top, the same image was spliced together by the software in seconds and features pre-identified. So I think that may be of great interest to practices, and we can follow up later on. Bridges. Bridges form part of port infrastructure in many cases. I know that Chris was talking about the fact that he'd like the bridge raised so that he could bring higher container vessels into his port. So this is an aerial view, satellite image, and then bathymetric data that is superimposed on top. And you can see the blue areas show scour occurring from flow around the pylons in the river. So again, these are images using high resolution scanning sonar of the bridge piers and the supporting structure. And you can see that on the lower left, this rail bridge, the bridge itself is probably supporting the pier, not the other way around, based on the scour. Very, very good tools. Now, dredge monitoring. Real-time dredge monitoring also is very applicable to saving time and money. A lot of ports will sit there and contract dredge operators to come in and dredge. Typically, what's been done is that the contractor and the facility will each contract with a surveyor to come and survey and do pre-survey. They then compare the data and agree on a baseline. And then the dredger does their job. And then afterwards, they do post-survey examinations, compare the data, and then agree whether the dredger met the contract requirements or not. We actually are working with a German company that has lots and lots of experience in this space to do real-time dredge monitoring on the dredge while the dredge is operating before it moves to make sure that there is contract compliance. And so what you see on the lower left is a single beam echo sounder that's mounted on an extremely precise rotator, and that instrument can produce a point cloud like the colored image in the lower right of that picture. On the upper right is an example of the three-dimensional data that is presented to the operator in the cabin. So on the lower level is an elevation profile of where the dredging has occurred. The red line is the contract line, and the software actually measures real time how the dredge is progressing in removing material down to that contract line. So we think that there's a lot of benefits to the market in terms of being able to maximize dredging time with a minimum amount of disruption to move the dredge, do a survey, and then, you know, reposition the dredge to continue working in order to meet the contract. So pre and post dredge survey, we have experience in real-time dredge monitoring. We'll be speaking about this at the WIDA annual conference in Houston, Texas. In the last week of July, I'll actually be presenting that paper. And again, if there's more interest in learning more about real-time dredge monitoring, happy to talk with you. The third thing is shallow survey. So we know the Army Corps, you know, likes to work with a 200 kilohertz frequency, you know, based on fluid mud conditions. But there are lots of places where you want to get data and it's just difficult because you can't get there with normal survey equipment. So the photograph in the upper right is actually a remote operated vehicle that's owned by the Port of Hamburg in Germany. And the photo at the upper left shows the bottom of that tiny vessel. And this is a multi-beam sonar called the M3 that actually meets IHO standards for special order shallow survey. And the advantage is that it can get into spots, as you can see from that photograph in the upper right, that are almost unreachable by a standard survey vessel. And yet the data may be very important to know. And on the lower right, you can see that the instruments can also be mounted on a vessel of opportunity. In this case, it's an FBI dive team boat used for diver supervision and also for search before they deploy the diver. And that's on a pole mount delivered from Universal Sonar Mount, one of our OEM suppliers based out of California. So we can work with any applications that you have in hard to get areas. And the sonar is integrated with HIPAC, IVA, Quinsy, and SonarWiz. And just some examples of the data here. This is from all scan inspections up in a very shallow river in Alberta. This is an example of a number of the very different vessels, all of which have had this sonar installed. So a lot of flexibility and a lot of creativity to do low-cost surveys with extremely good data results. This particular topic now I think is quite exciting. And Ron, I mentioned this to you when we were having drinks one night at the Savannah, Georgia meeting. And this is a concept for doing real-time berth depth monitoring. So the same sonar that I showed you that is used for real-time dredge monitoring, if you can imagine a berth pocket and sonars that are permanently installed onto the berth wall, permanently installed, that create three-dimensional point clouds on a continual basis or on a scheduled basis in that berth pocket, positioned so that the adjacent sonars overlap to provide really good coverage. Why is that important? Well, it's because the instant you do a periodic survey with a hydrographic vessel, the next day you could have a storm and you actually don't know what conditions have changed. And so everybody operates with a factor of safety. And really what that does is that comes at the economic cost of underloading vessels. And if you look at the lower left, this is actually a map of the Gulf of Mexico with all those areas are for lightering and reverse lightering activities in the Gulf. So there's a lot of time and energy and carbon emissions that occur to transfer material back and forth because people just don't know what the actual berth depth is. So here's an example of a point cloud using that echo sounder, the instrument on the lower left. And on the right, you can see that each one of those dots represents a very precise 3-degree beam from this echo sounder. And when you put them all together, you get a very good idea of what is going on in the bottom condition. So my belief is, in terms of a value proposition for ports, especially bulk cargo ports, where the amount of cargo per inch is amazing in terms of the value that is not being delivered. We can allow partners to maximize cargo based on the true real-time depth under the keel, adjusted for tide and adjusted for wind and wave activity. Minimize lightering and reverse lightering activity, which is a second order cost. But if you transfer less material, it costs you less time and money to do that. It also mitigates elision risks with sunken objects. You're probably aware of the Atlas One case where a oil tanker hit a uncharted submerged ankle. And after years of legislation, finally, the terminal operator was found liable to the ship owner and to the US government, totaling over $100 million for damage, even though the anchor was uncharted. So this would provide information about objects that should not be in the berth pocket that actually are there. It also allows recovery from storm events faster. If there's a storm, you could see a sunken boat or a navigation aid that's broken loose and drifted and so forth. And the final point is that, you know, when you identify shoaling or siltation, then you can actually trigger dredging when the dredging is actually needed, not just on a schedule. So, you know, those are the potential benefits. This is a mock-up of what the information could look like. So for someone who's responsible for vessel loading, they could have an aerial photograph of their terminal, identify where the sonar is, and then take a look at what kind of report they want. They could then identify what the point cloud looks like in the berth pocket. If they get an alarm and see that there's something of concern, they can say, is it a container? Is it a car? Is it, what is it that's in their berth pocket triggering the alarm? So this is quite useful for someone who's planning loading and unloading activities, but we also have a version for pilots. And, you know, this system is being used right now for real-time wind and wave data by pilots on the Pacific Northwest. And you can see here that we could program this to identify depth change warnings, moderate. So the pilot could go and get an advanced look at that particular pocket area and see what is it. Is it something with the shape? Do we need to have the terminal operator go and take a quick look before the vessel arrives? So in terms of a value proposition, I was thinking about Savannah. I mean, we were there and I was really impressed with the tour that Chris did. So here's a photograph of the area. And what's interesting is siltation obviously is a problem because there's turbidity. When we were there during the plant tour, there actually was a U.S. Army Corps dredge that was in the river. You can see here that there's a confluence of two different branches that are joining. So there's going to be siltation activity where the current changes, and that's going to affect the port. And so I was thinking, you know, what's the value proposition? Well, this is mainly container traffic here, not bulk goods. But, you know, our estimate is that if we took the responsibility to install the gear, then to do a berth pocket, let's estimate four of those sonar heads, one power and telemetry box. We figured that the cost of having that system would be $22,000 per month. And this is software as a service or data as a service model. So that's what the fee would be to access the data, but the installation and the maintenance would be our responsibility. So for a Panamax bulker, 1 centimeter of depth, so that's roughly half an inch, that is equivalent to 80 metric tons of added cargo. And so, you know, using the spot price of sulfur, the last time I looked, 15 centimeters or 6 inches of additional cargo for that vessel is over $500,000 of cargo to that vessel. And that's per vessel visit. So that's an example of what the economics are and how strong they are based on the bulk cargo. But then I looked at, the container vessel terminal opportunity. And, you know, when I learned how hard Chris and his crew work to actually improve the container number by just one container per hour at a berth, obviously there's a lot of focus on efficiency and economy there. And so I just ran the numbers, you know, based on discussions with Chris, you know, their tariff per TEU is about $100 based on the data that's available from, the Georgia Port Authority website. At Garden City, they handled 5,400,000 TEUs. If you do the math and take the revenue per berth divided by 9, you come up with $540 million total for Garden City. Divide by 9 berths, that's $60 million of revenue per berth. And then when you annualize the number that I have up at the top, the $22,000, the investment as a percentage of the revenue from that berth is 0.0044%. In other words, it's a rounding error. So this may be very interesting for port operators to consider. The final point is that when we were down at the annual seminar, there were two gentlemen from the Marine Center at the Northwestern Michigan College who were there, and they do have courses that are available to train people on what type of technologies are there to make work more efficient below the waterline, because different tools do different things. And so two of those courses are delivered online. You can see on the right there's a table. There's a fundamentals of sonar systems and acoustics course. And then there's an inspection technologies and application course. Like, when would you use a side scan sonar? When would you use a high resolution scanning sonar? When would you use a multi-beam sonar? And then when would you use a sub-bottom profiler? And then the bottom course is hands-on with all of these instruments with inspection in a bottle of water, conducting inspections under the guidance of expert sonar users. And I think that may be something that may be very worthwhile for people in this audience to consider. So that is my presentation. I hope that you enjoyed that. There is one more thing that I just wanted to show, and I'm not sure if people saw this, but this just landed in my inbox today on Marine Log. Georgia Port Authority sets an all-time trade record. And there's a photograph of the port with a dredge. So I hope you found that interesting, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present.
Conrad, thank you very much. That was an excellent presentation. The technology out there is absolutely amazing sometimes to see some of the details of it. So I guess, Paula, the last item on the agenda today is your in your wheelhouse, if you want to talk a little bit about the Lighthouse Awards and the annual convention.
Yeah, sure. The first thing I want to mention, thank you, is the Lighthouse Awards. The Lighthouse Awards applications are closed. So thank you to everybody who did submit. We are now in the judging phase. So that means we do need a couple of judges to judge the applications. And the judges do need to be ports, from ports. So could I get maybe the three volunteers from ports to raise their hands? You have one month approximately until we've got until July 18th to judge the application that came in.
Well, if you're allowed 2 years in a row, I will help you out, Paula. No worries.
Well, thank you, Hank. I appreciate that. Oh, and I see Maria. Are you raising your hand to volunteer?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much, Maria. Maria and Hank. Thank you so much. Is there one more?
I'll hop in and help.
Thank you, Ron. That's wonderful. That's all that we need for the Lighthouse Awards. Let me just write that down. Maria Rivas. And just to give you a little bit of Ron, did you help last year, Ron? No, you didn't. Hank did. Ron and Maria, just to give you a little bit of background, we do it online. We have a system, it's called Submittable. We'll give you basically access to our system online. You'll get to review the applications online, and you basically grade the applications. And then we'll kind of compile your three scores together and use the scoring from the three of you to determine what level we'll consider them. Like if they get an excellent, the award of excellence, distinguished, or merit award, or even if it doesn't deserve an award at all. If you rank it really low, we may not award, give them an award at all. So just to kind of give you a little bit of background, but you'll have a month to review the award. All right, and I'm just getting a notice that we've got 10 minutes left, so I guess I better go quickly through the rest of it. So that's the Lighthouse Awards. Thank you so much, Hank, Maria, and Ron, for volunteering. The next thing that I would like to go through very quickly is the annual convention. Of course, our annual convention is coming up, so we just want to kind of go through it and let everybody know what's going on. We're starting to put our convention program into shape. So I just want to give everybody a kind of walk you through the program really, really quickly that we've put together so far. So you have some idea of what's going on. So I'm going to share my screen with you just to walk through that. And the Facilities Engineering Committee does have a little bit of a role. So I want to share that with you as well. So if you go to our website and click on the events tab and go to the annual convention website, this is what pops up. And if you want to see the business program, you just click on the business program tab and then click here to view the draft agenda. And it's constantly being updated. We're working on confirming speakers. So it's constantly getting updated. So there's more information being added all the time. So if you're waiting for information about what's being considered for the program, continue to go to the website to see what's being added. On the first day, Sunday, it's really just kind of a registration and setup day for exhibitors. And the board of directors are having a retreat. But Monday, October 17th, we start with some of our business meetings. We've got delegation meetings. Our legislative policy council is meeting. our board of directors, our professional development board. And then we start with our annual membership meeting. Our golf tournament is going to be held that day. And then we've got some workshops, and these are new. They're being kind of sponsored, if you will, by our committees, including the Facilities Engineering Committee. So we've got a couple of workshops that are being held that day. One is being sponsored by the Communications Committee. There's one on global supply chain risk management. There's one on, and this one is being sponsored, co-sponsored by, I think, the Security Committee and the Facilities Engineering Committee. And these are open to all registrants. So just because they're being sponsored by a particular committee doesn't mean that it's only that committee that can attend. Anybody can attend, anybody who's registered for the event. And then that evening, we've got our port CEO reception and then our welcoming reception. And then Tuesday, we start with our breakfast, commissioner session, that's for commissioners only, and then our opening ceremonies and presentation of AAPA awards, our networking break in the exhibit hall. We've got lots of networking opportunities in the exhibit hall for exhibitors. We're going to have a marquee keynote address that's going to be by a government official that we're working on securing. We haven't announced that yet, but we're very excited to announce that person when we get them. So stay tuned for that. Networking lunch in the exhibit hall, product demonstrations in the AAPA theater. We're going to have a theater on the show floor for the first time this year that we're really excited about for exhibitors. All exhibitors have an opportunity to sign up for the AAPA theater. So we'll have product demonstrations there on the show floor. We're going to have panel discussions and roundtable discussions throughout the day. So you can see now we've got the topics are now announced for those. We're working on securing speakers and moderators and things like that for those, but you can see the discussions have been, or the topics have been finalized. The future of cruising, global supply chain, digitalization of US ports, offshore wind power. And then we've got our exhibit hall reception, see you in Denver. That's to promote the next year's show, will be in Denver. And we've got a signature cocktail because the reception's being sponsored by the Pasha Group. So it's, I think, a Pasha Teeny, I think is what it's going to be called. So that's going to be cute. And then the next day, in Wednesday, October 19th, we've got registration, the Continental Breakfast and networking. Our Supply Chain Partner Council meeting will be that morning. Our general session, Path Towards Resiliency. More networking break in the exhibit hall, roundtable discussion, 5G at ports. Some more roundtable discussions, diversity programming and your federal grant process, maritime fuels of the future and the role of ports, more product demonstrations and more and the networking lunch in the expo hall. And then we've got the professional port manager, the PPM graduation ceremony and the Lighthouse Awards presentation ceremony. And then our AAPA speaker series sponsored speaker, that'll be a big name speaker, and closing remarks and save the date for the annual convention. And then our closing event will be at the City Walk, which if you've ever been to Orlando, it's a really nice location. We're looking forward to that. That should be really nice, and the closing event. So, just thought I'd share that with you, that the closing, that the program for the annual convention is really coming together very nicely, and I hope to see many of you there. Are there any questions about that? Were there any questions for Conrad? We kind of skipped over that. We've got about 3 minutes to go, so if you have any questions for Conrad.
Well, maybe I have a small question on, let me turn my video on, that's also okay, I guess. I got a small question on the birdwatch system, Conrad. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Would it be on, well, maybe not now, but later on, an idea to make this birdwatch self-learning, that he is able to learn from the data that is receiving over time and combine it with tidal information, et cetera, so that it could be a predictive asset?
I don't see any reason why not. You know, the idea is that we collect the data from the sonar heads, push it to an FTP site in the cloud, and then we can process the data. We're actually partnering with a Canadian company called Marine Labs, and they are doing real-time wind and wave data analysis right now, which is being used for pilots bringing vessels into port. So they're already contracting with the Dubai ports up in Prince Rupert and the Canadian Coast Guard. So I think that is very much where we can go with big data now. And I think it's a good idea. For everybody on the call, like, I know a lot of people missed this because of the scheduling, but I'm happy to make the slide deck available and to follow up as well. So.
All right, thank you.
Great.
Okay, I think we have like 1 minute left. John.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Paul and everyone. So our next meeting will be the second Thursday of July, July 14th at 2 p.m. And we'll make sure we get the announcement out correct this time. Sorry about that inconvenience today. If anybody in the group here has any suggestions for topics, please send them to Paula so we can include those on our agenda. Okay, I don't have anything else, Paula. Ron, do you have any?
It's just my pleasure to serve here and help out. So
great. I'm
glad to stay involved.
Thanks, Ron. All right, everyone. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.